Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, as usual, we have good news, bad news, and crazy news for conservatives. Some people might cringe when we tell them that the good news is that Hugo Chavez is dead. And you know, your mother always told you, if you don't have anything nice to say about people, or especially the dead, don't say anything at all. But we have to. And we're not going to dance on the man's grave. We're going to talk about, at least I am.
Oh, speak for yourself, Greg. I got my tap shoes on right now.
But, you know,
or the Irish jig, or they're probably some sort of, like, you know, I don't know a specific Venezuelan dance, but there's probably some sort of Macarena dance we could do on the Chavez grave. So you keep it classy, Greg. I'm going to.
So here's the thing about Hugo Chavez, you know, and he'll be the subject of the third martini in a way as well. First of all, here's his most famous comment, you know, this supposed respected world leader, at least in the eyes of liberals and commies around the world. Here's what he said about George W. Bush famously at the United Nations in 2006.
And the devil came here yesterday.
Ayer estuvo el diablo.
Yesterday, the devil came here. Right here.
Huele a azufre
todavía. And it smells of sulfur still today.
And as you pointed out on Twitter yesterday, Jim, perhaps he's smelling sulfur once again, given the latest developments in his life. Hugo Chavez was a thug. He stole from the people. We found out now he's worth $2 billion. So supposedly a champion of the people, he committed to destitution in Venezuela, expanding the ranks of poverty. He was friends to the world's worst actors, Castro, Ahmadinejad, basically anyone that hated America. So the fact that he's off the scene is great news. He influenced a lot of bad people elsewhere in Latin America. Hopefully that influence will wane and we'll maybe even get some rational people in charge in Venezuela. But the fact that Hugo Chavez is dead for the sake of the United States and pretty much the rest of the world is a very good thing.
You know, I'm going to disagree slightly, Greg. You said, here's the thing about Hugo Chavez. Here's the thing about Hugo Chavez. He's dead. look, his policies were very, very bad. What's more is I don't think, you know, economic leftism and you know, nationalizing state industries and all that stuff, that in and of itself is bad. But what really made Hugo Chavez the truly nefarious dictator that he was, with the degree to which he concentrated power into his own authority, disregarded basic human rights guarantees, and basically, if you opposed him in Venezuela, you were in trouble. You know, remember we saw the video of somebody like getting punched during a television show, and definitely a cult of personality down there. And if you dared defy Hugo Chavez, you were likely to get jailed, likely to get harassed. The instrument of the state was designed to suppress dissent. And that is what is, you know, even worse than terrible economic policies, even worse than playing footsie with the, you know, world's rogue state actors, even much worse than, you know, being a buffoon and obnoxious in front of the United Nations. In the end, he did not tolerate dissent within Venezuela, and as a result, took a country that has all the potential in the world of being a you know, self-sufficient and prosperous country and just ran it into the ground. We'll talk a bit more about the praise for him in certain quarters in our crazy martini. What makes this particularly good martini, besides the fact that a bad man has departed this earth, is that there is an opportunity here. That this is, you know, the regime is going to wobble a bit, and there is a chance for a push against it. President Maduro's is, you know, apparently going to have some sort of election in a year. But every time I hear Maduro's, I'm thinking plantains. so I'm picturing, you know. It is not likely that we will see a democratic revolution, you know, in Venezuela. But a lot of these things are driven by cults of personality. And as much as the regime is not, you know, going to topple tomorrow, it is weaker than it was a short while ago. You know, these things do not run by themselves. And you need a charismatic leader. And it's likely to say there may be an opportunity for serious improvement in Venezuela. So we got to cross our fingers and knock on wood and see how U.S. policy can help the pro-democracy and pro-free market and pro-pluralist groups down there in Venezuela.
Yeah, the damage he did to the freedoms of his own people and the damage he inspired throughout the region is just very, very troubling. And once again, the fact that he's off the scene, not a tear being shed here at the Three Martini Lunch. On to the bad martini now. And once again, on to the sequester fight and the way that the Obama administration is petulantly going about trying to make this as painful as possible. Now we have actual documented proof of that. Email evidence from the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, which I didn't even know existed, but maybe we can cut money right there. But in this internal email, Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service official Charles Brown said he asked if he could try to spread out the sequester cuts in his region to minimize the impact. And he said he was told not to do anything that would lessen the dire impacts Congress had been warned of. Here's the quote. "We have gone on record with a notification to Congress and whoever else that APHIS would eliminate assistance to producers in 24 states in managing wildlife damage to the aquaculture industry unless they provide funding to cover the costs. So it is our opinion that however you manage that reduction, you need to make sure that you are not contradicting what we said the impact would be," Mr. Brown, in the internal email, said his superiors told him. So, Jim, no cynicism or politics being played there at all.
Yeah, I mean, this is the smoking gun. It's, you know, confirms what many of us suspected, that once the White House and the president and the head of the executive branch has effectively wedded himself to the argument that sequester will be devastating, he needs sequester to be devastating. And so we've kind of – we actually have – you talked about in the previous Martini, we talked about a revolt of the people against the government. What we're seeing here, Greg, is a revolt of the government against the people. They basically have decided that in order to avoid this 2% cut, they have to make they have to make the argument that they can't cut 2% without catastrophe. So they have to create a catastrophe. Even if, as we argue, look, you probably can cut 2%. First of all, if you put entitlements on the table, you really don't even need to cut discretionary spending that much. It'd probably be a good idea. There's plenty of waste. And if you do entitlements, that takes care of the biggest chunk of our deficit and debt problems. But it's, that's off the table. So when you do that, it goes from a 2% across the board cut to like 7 to 10%, defense getting hit the hardest. That's, unfortunate, but gee whiz, that's not, crushing and devastating. If you've been in the private sector since the Great Recession hit, you've probably seen cuts much worse than that. So what is the purpose of this? And now we see in this email right here, the purpose of this is to tell Americans that they cannot cut government at all anywhere, or else it's going to end up in disaster. And now we have a situation in which the government is aiming painful and highest impact way instead of the lowest impact way.
Back to Hugo Chavez and his timely death for Martini number three now. And in slight contrast to the opinions we expressed on this earlier, you would think from the comments by many different Democrats that we've lost one of the great humanitarians and great world leaders of our time. And we're not talking about necessarily fringe figures. Former President Jimmy Carter, quote, "President Chavez will be remembered for his bold assertion of autonomy and independence for Latin American governments and for his formidable communication skills and personal connection with supporters in his country and abroad to whom he gave hope and empowerment." Jose Serrano, a congressman from New York City, Democrat, obviously. "Hugo Chavez was a leader that understood the needs of the poor. He was committed to empowering the powerless. R.I.P., Mr. President." Sean Penn says he's lost a friend. Oliver Stone, "I mourn a great hero to the majority of his people and those who struggle throughout the world for a place. Hated by the entrenched classes, Hugo Chavez will live forever in history. My friend, rest finally in a peace long earned." That was over two tweets, in case you were wondering if he used too many characters. And even the mainstream liberal press, very non-committal on just how horrible Hugo Chavez was on so many levels that we've already discussed here. Instead, they've come out with this coverage that mostly seems to be focused about how he, was passionate and inspired his people and so forth. And Jim, I guess we're getting a good glimpse into the left here in that ultimately, I guess that's the type of leader they want here.
You know how sometimes in order to foil a bank robber, Greg, they'll put some sort of like a kind of an ink bomb type thing in the bag. So that the bad guys, they steal the money, they run away, and then they open up the bag to get the cash, and the ink bomb goes off, marking them as the bank robbers.
Right.
Think of Hugo Chavez's death as an ink bomb, a metaphor I'm sure you expected to hear when you woke up this morning. I mean, it's a useful marker of who we used to use the term useful idiots were for horrible dictatorial regimes. In the end, look, Hugo Chavez, as we mentioned in the first Martini, Hugo Chavez oppressed his people and relentlessly and ruthlessly and brutally. So I don't care if, you were buddy buddies with Spicoli or Really loved Oliver Stone's movies, and you know, we're a swell guy welcoming him and stuff like that. There's just two thoughts I would note to this. The first is that what's kind of interesting is that there's no real consequence to basically saying, boy, isn't this dictator swell? I mean, don't you think that if you had said something, hooray for racism, some sort of really utterly awful statement, that there'd be some sort of social consequence? And either our society has lost the ability to generate a social consequence for praising a dictator, or the Sean Penns and Oliver Stones, Jimmy Carters and Jose Serranos of the world travel in circles in which you can say Hugo Chavez was a swell guy, I'm so sad he's died, and with no consequence whatsoever. Jose Serrano should get some glares as he walks through the halls of Congress to say, look, this is a guy who he's elected to, you know, and sworn an oath to the Constitution. And here he is saying how much he misses a guy who basically shredded any notion of constitutional law in Venezuela. You know, Jose Serrano really, like, you know, should pay some sort of consequence for this. And he won't, because he's in a heavily Democratic district and he never has to worry about reelection and all these other reasons. Thankfully, not every Democrat is saying, boy, that Hugo rocked. You know, thankfully, there are enough that may be thinking it, but perhaps they have the good judgment to either not say it, or they recognize that no matter how much you may want a particular economic policy, or no matter how much you may loathe George W. Bush, the methods of Hugo Chavez, which range from the most, you know, ruthless brutality against political opponents to, I'm told, I was at a Latin American conference a couple of years ago, Latin American Entrepreneurs Conference, and the actress Maria Chita Alonso came up and started talking about Venezuela, and people from the audience started yelling, and she said, look, the story of Venezuela, he prefers blondes, but all the evidence we know shows that he prefers them black and blue. So Hugo Chavez was just a terrible person from top to bottom. And if you look at that and you say, well, he was complicated, or what a mixed record it is, you know, it says a lot about you. And I think we're all no true shocks or surprises on who Hugo Chavez's biggest buddies turned out to be. But, you know, it's good to see the nation being clear in its pro-dictatorial views, you know, once again.
Yeah, kind of pathetic that they'll probably
when I say the nation, I mean the Nation magazine, yes. Not the nation as in the United States. Yes,
that's exactly. And as I heard somewhere else today, hats off to the Cuban healthcare system, which is supposedly the best in the world. Well done, Cuban healthcare system. Well done. Jim, we saw this day coming.
We did.
It's finally here.
So everyone, I hope everyone's able to get this through the horrible, I was going to say Snowquester, but actually where I am, it's mostly Rainquester. Pardon me, you know, if you'll excuse me, I now have to throttle the local public schools for canceling the entire day on account of rain.
Sadly, it wouldn't be the first time here, even when they knew it would only be rain. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.